Hi, I'm John.
I'm Genevieve.
I'm Adrienne.
And this week we've watched Q2, and now we're going to argue about whether it'll make us quit Star Trek.
So this episode is bad, right? I think this is a bad episode. And it's so late. It's the season. This is like the seventh to last episode that they produced. Like, it's late season seven.
You know,
and this is what they're cutting out.
I wish Olivia was here. She's still not here, folks. Yeah, deal with it. I don't know what to tell you. We have real lives, but because both of us keep being told Voyager gets good, and we're in season seven, and it's not. It's still kind of
Voyager. Voyager is a quiet show. It's a sitcom, yeah. More than like every other, like I guess TNG as well, but like it's not trying to be as big as some of the other Star Treks. And I think that's fine. Like, I think that like the highs of Voyager are probably lower than the highs of some other shows. But I think it's also, it has like a comfort rewatch factor. Like it's a nice show to just, you know, have on.
You know that on Twitter there's the like DS9 subplots Twitter account? All of those could just be the main plots of Voyager episodes. And that's a problem.
I feel like Voyager, and I feel like this episode brings up some things, which is that I think that the Voyager writers like really hated women and really hate women. And so a lot of the that the show really sucks is in the lack of, you know, it just, this episode has some choice examples in it, but I sometimes, I don't know. It's interesting. I think that Voyager is kind of like the Brady Bunch of the Star Trek universe. And if you kind of view it that way, I feel like it's a little bit better. Like, I obviously didn't ever watch Star Trek until 2019 and binged it all in like 18 months. So that's my perspective. But, just watching it, you know, as like the understanding of the big space family lost in space, that, I don't know, the stakes are high enough already with them being lost in the Delta Quadrant for me to just kind of let some of it roll.
I mean, it's kind of like the problem, I was thinking more about the thing the writers hating women, and as you said, it's, you can vibe with it, but it's like the original series writers like women, they're just in the 60s, so that comes with that, that doesn't end
right.
The TNG writers don't respect women.
Right.
But the Voyager writers just actively hate them.
Yes.
There's no other explanation.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's a lot to consume in two, 3 years. That's a lot of Star Trek.
Yeah, Genevieve got me into Star Trek. So she got me into Star Trek when I was in a peak depression mode, and it literally saved my life. So that was what kept me hanging on. But yeah, my experience of watching it is, you know, I didn't have the experience of coming home and watching it after school, like it would have been on for me back in those days. I just literally mainlined it. And I have a terrible memory too. So that's another thing, is that my memory is so bad with certain things like this that I will literally forget completely the plots of certain episodes. And because I watched them all so fast, I'll get to go back and rewatch it. And so that's exactly how that happened with this. Like, I remembered the bones of the episode, but I didn't remember a lot of the detail that just, you kind of see it and you're like, wow, they really did that with an underage actor as the lead character of this episode. Like,
oh God. And I do have to ask, Genevieve, what episode did you start with? What episode, Genevieve, did you go, this is what you have to start with?
Oh, that's easy. The Wire from Deep
Space. Yes! Yes!
That was how I got Adrian. Yes, no, we did, because, I mean, I guess technically no, because the way that I got you to watch Star Trek at all is because me and Adrian met on Good Omens Twitter. Truly, Good Omens Summer 2019. Never going to be another time like it.
Golden age.
But, you know, it did eventually, I can only talk about 6-hour-long episodes for approximately 7 months, apparently. And that's when I started this lot. And we were looking for something to watch. And I had met some other Trekkies. I actually got into Star Trek Twitter because of Good Omens Twitter, because there's so much of an overlap there. And obviously, I've been watching Star Trek for a lot longer, but I wasn't on Star Trek Twitter. And in some group chat, we were sharing clips of Garak and Bashir, and we were like big Crowley Aziraphale vibes. And so I took like recordings of my television on my phone and like sent you clips from The Wire, right. And that's how we got to watch it.
That's right. Oh, and we started with past prologue, so we didn't start with the DS9 premiere. It started the right there.
The DS9 premiere is so good, and past prologue is so fine.
Didn't we start with our first episode?
No, we did not. We started with season 1, episode 3, because it took me about 3 months to then go back and watch the premiere, and I was like, oh, there's actually a lot of really useful information in here that helps put everything
okay. It was a tenuous thing. Okay, so it was like one of those things where I was trying to play it cool. You know, I didn't want to front load. You might have to watch 800 episodes. I was like trying, because the episode 3 is the one where we meet Garak. And so I showed them that one because I was like, this will hook them. And I didn't know if they would be hooked if I started with Space Jesus.
It's a good hook.
It is a good hook, but it is a lot.
I mean, were there any quit moments, Adrian? Like, were there any moments that Genevieve showed you something and you went, what the fuck is this?
In general, like before I started watching it, or just in the first season of...
In general, just like any point. What was the first time you went, what is this crazy show I'm watching?
Well, the first time I went that was definitely when I saw Garak come over and massage Bashir's shoulders at the beginning of the episode.
Your first episode is also in your most... Well.
I'm like, well, this is gay. I'm into it. You know, like, say no more. I'm like, oh, this character doesn't come back until season 2, episode 5. Well, I guess I'll just have to mainline all of it until we get back to seeing him again. You know,
like, you can make fun of my methods, but they are proven effective.
It's true.
I guess I'll have to keep going until he comes back again. Oh, God. And now you're here forever. And
that, I will say that your full meltdown, speaking of the episode we're getting into, when you first started TNG, because we finished Deep Space Nine, and then you, I believe, watched TNG next.
I did.
And the first time you saw Q, you're like, they just made him like that? Like, that's what they're starting with?
Okay, yeah, okay, there was no build-up to Q just being like that.
Here's the context for that, though, okay? So we watched all of DS9, literally, like, we binged it, mainlined it, like, we were just on a tear, like, a complete tear. Genevieve and I would be on the phone for, like, 4 or 5 hours a day watching Star Trek, doing nothing else, and just doing it, you know? Because this was during the plague, or... No, it wasn't. This was before the plague, because I was just super depressed, and I was in bed all the time. I was, like, really not in a good state. So I started watching TNG. I'm like, okay, you know, there's a new series coming up. There's Picard coming up in January 2020. I have to watch all of this before I watch it. So I just had it on my phone screen because I was in the kitchen. And the first 20 minutes or so of Encounter at Farpoint are just, like, critically boring. I'm sorry. It's
boring.
No.
Okay, so Jack, I say this with a lot of love. Is it possible that you just like boring things? Because that's fine. But, like, is that why you like it?
I do like infrastructure. You have a point.
Well, I really liked Encounter at Farpoint, but then I was watching on my tiny little phone screen and Q showed up and I'm like, who is this homosexual? I'm like, this got really interesting all of a sudden because I was just watching it just to watch it. And then Q showed up. I was like, oh, well, I like this homosexual. And then once again, I'm like, oh, so there's another like 14 or 16 episodes I got to get in before this person comes back again, you know? But that's like why I kept watching TNG, frankly. It was all because of Q. Like,
and that's a long and bumpy road to Q2, which is the last time Q appeared on screen before 2020. And
really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. What a way to go out with a nepotism episode.
Okay, just like, can we do a quick refresher on the episode that came before this? So, correct me if I'm wrong, but Q wants to have a baby with Janeway because the Q continuum has gotten too boring and he thinks new blood will spice things up. Is that the logic of that episode? Yeah.
Well, we did do this, right?
Yeah. Hold on. I'm trying to find it.
Is that the Q and the Gray?
Yeah, we did the Q and the Gray It came episode 31 of this podcast. It's fucking mental. The only good part is Civil War uniforms. John Delancey looks great in a Union uniform. He looks good in blue.
True. Very true.
The only good part of that episode.
Fair enough.
I think
the Voyager, me a look. But
I'm not giving anyone a look. I'm giving my notes a look.
Well, I think what's interesting about Voyager episodes with the Q is that my favorite Q Voyager episode is actually Death Wish, which has a lot of important continuum lore. And to my knowledge, is the only time that we ever see anybody enter the continuum or any sort of representation of the continuum besides the trial room. And that's a very interesting episode, but the whole character assassination I felt that they put Q through in Voyager is just, it's just a crime. It's just really very flat.
He's so much meaner in Voyager than he, like, but he's like
the hijinks. He's a crybaby as well.
Yes.
Well, like, yes, did he introduce humanity to the Borg and cause the deaths of thousands of citizens? Sure. But, like, in a quirky, fun way? Whereas I feel like every time he shows up on Voyager, I'm just like, you should jump off a bridge.
And if we segue from jumping off a bridge, it is that kind of moment, because we start with Icheb, derogatory.
Okay, I actually did like that they start off this episode making fun of boring fanboys. Like, I feel like his report where he's just like regurgitating information about James T. Kirk and Jane was just bored out of her mind is me every time I'm talking to straight white Trek Twitter. Like, I don't, like, I'm not saying that the things that you say aren't true. I just don't care about them in any way.
Yeah, no, that's
And I did like that. I didn't like 40 seconds into the episode when Q shows up and calls her Kathy. I hate that he calls her Kathy.
Hate that.
I hate it so much, Kathy. And they do it so many times. And
my note Kathy, here is, both do it. My note here reads, oh no, a child, and he sucks.
That is a lot of Star Trek, to be quite fair.
Star Trek
doesn't like kids.
Star Trek is much like Jean-Luc Picard. It doesn't like kids, but it can't avoid them.
Wow. Wow. So true.
Anyway, what's Star Trek Picard season two?
Yeah, and then I put in my notes, incredible casting of a shithead. I know it's John Lance's actual son, but he just, like, looks so punchable, like, such a twerp. Like, I just want to bully this
John
child.
John Delancey's kid would sing raps. No offense to Keegan Delancey, I'm sure he's a very nice person, but Q Jr. looks like the kind of person who would sing the N-word at me at school, trying to make me punch.
Those are the lyrics. Those are the lyrics.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, this episode is directed by LeVar Burton.
Yeah, that's.
I saw that. And I'm like, oh, really?
Yeah. LeVar, you hate to see it.
So,
I think that
you know.
I think that my
you gotta get your directing credits up somehow.
But this is my biggest issue with this episode, an issue with Q in Voyager in particular, and I just need to say this because I've said it 1,000 times and I need it to be documented. I find it so bonkers that they took this alien who showed up at the beginning of TNG in full eyeshadow, purple lipstick, a big cape, and a huge fancy hat, who's clearly thirsty for Jean-Luc Picard for 7 entire seasons of TNG. We get to Voyager with the Voyager writers who want everything to be the way, I guess, that it is in the 90s, 2000s, the Voyager writers who clearly hate women. And they're like, this alien who is beyond our comprehension, who has the power to manipulate energy, matter, space, and time, is definitely straight. This is a straight alien. There's no way that this alien would ever consider, you know, doing, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's no way this alien would ever consider that.
You can say sex on this podcast. It's okay.
You can say sex on this podcast. You can say fuck on this podcast. We are English. I am English. This is a British podcast. You can talk about shagging all you fucking want.
So there's no way that they're like really insistent. They're like, this Q that is limitless and expansive and everything. This Q would never, ever suck dick. Never. Would never, ever consider it. Would never do that. Never ever. And like the way that they force the heterosexuality is so out of character and so distracting and just so ridiculous. Like it's just, it's jarring.
All I want to say to this is very simply, has anyone written any enemies to lovers Q Junior Itchep fan fiction?
Oh, I do. I have notes about that. I do have notes about
we'll
that.
We'll get to it later because
we'll get to it later. I do sort of ship it.
I hate that I do, but I'm
just
I hate to agree with people about shipping.
Kidnapping someone in a little shuttle pod and exploring the galaxy together, pretty gay, to be quite honest.
Exactly. What if we kissed in the Jeffries tubes?
I will say so Q comes and he shows him, the last time we saw this child, it was a baby, an infant, and now this kid's like 16-ish, is I think what we're supposed to assume, and he is a terrorist, like literally a terrorist. They're both called Q, so that is something that is annoying the whole time. But
I do like that about, all the Q are called Q.
Yes,
I don't
hate it as a concept, but from talking about it, it is going to get a little confusing. So Q says, "My son Q is a terrorist," and I think at first he says, "I want him to have a little vacay, little R&R. You're his godmother because I said so." He does make a joke about how he should have gone with Picard as a godfather instead, which I did think was funny. But we've decided that Janeway is mommy.
He says that too. He calls, her mommy, which is so violent. It makes me furious.
Different times in the episode. And every single time I squirm. And every single time I can swear that Kate Mulgrew looks ill.
Yes.
Every time I wrote down Mommy Janeway in my notes, and then literally 45 seconds later he's like, "Mommy, you're mommy."
It's pretty bad because Q essentially just leaves him, and he decides to, in following order, throw a techno party in the warp in the engineering. And I love the extras who are just trying to continue as normal while there's a rave going on. And then he goes to 709 and removes her clothes and
oh yeah,
she's not gonna fuck you, Rick. She's not gonna fuck you, Rick.
It's a very good example of, I think, the absolute thing that truly bothers me about 709's character, and more talking about her, is there's a certain type of person that every time you bring up that Jeri Ryan was too sexual, they're like, actually, she was a Borg. And so, she wasn't even thinking about that. She was, so unconcerned. But, it didn't bother. She didn't even think about it being revealing. And actually, you're the perv for being upset about her natural body form. And, they do this whole thing where he removes her clothes with his Q powers. And she's like, "I'm unbothered." And he's like, "Aren't you going to run and, scamper and cover up?" And she's like, "No." It's like, yeah, you're the perv. The number of times they tell us this 16-year-old is very straight as well. In the disco hall, they're naked ladies dancing.
This is a 16-year-old. It's a juvenile, omnipotent, a juvenile, omnipotent, expansive life form, right? And it's so crucial that they show him, played by a 16-year-old actor, with the nudity. I mean, it just
It's the Q equivalent of when 16-year-olds experiment with each other being straight. is Q being straight the equivalent of when straight white girls kiss their friends at parties?
Wow.
Or when they say, "Oh, it's okay, I don't mind, it's really cool, can I get a date a bi guy?" It's like, is that what being straight is to the Q continuum?
One can only hope. I don't know.
I choose to believe that because it's extremely funny to me. This is the equivalent of white girls kissing their friends at parties and then saying, "I don't know, that makes me a bit gay." It's like, fuck off. Fuck off, Kenna.
I will say that I did one of the wacky things that he does is he makes the computer a bitch. So, like, now when Janeway asks for black coffee, she's like, get it yourself. But, like, I did enjoy that you can really hear, like, it sounded like, you know, like, Mirror Scrapple or, like, Lasana. Like, it did, like, you could, like, hear Marjorie's voice, like, or Majel's
voice.
You can, like, really hear her personality. I thought that was, like, a cute thing. Obviously, you know that her voice is always, like, so monotone that, like, you almost forget that it's her. And then she, like, throws in a little flare and you're like, there you are, queen.
I do. Then, of course, Q Jr. does the only good thing he does the entire episode, which is sew up Neelix's mouth.
It was
this is an
anti
Neelix podcast.
That was some body horror shit when they showed his mouth.
Was a body horror. Like, I didn't realize it was a body horror thing. I thought it was just like he took his voice box out, but then it's like.
He doesn't have a mouth anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he caps it off by being like, why don't you fight the boar? Which Dad is not happy about.
Again, small point about Neelix. He says, I'm good with children. And, like, is he?
He's good with one child.
He's good with one child. And, like, he wasn't sure if he would be able to raise a daughter because he just never considered it. And, like, I don't know. I just feel... Like, Neelix, I don't know if I would necessarily... He dated a child.
That's what...
You're good with children. No, you're on a sex offenders register. Different.
Anyway,
so, yeah, it turns out that Q's a deadbeat dad.
And, Fucker.
Karen didn't take the kids. She left them with him. So... Yeah, everybody's decided that it's Q's fault that his child is terrible, which, to be fair, it probably is.
I mean, I do, like, similar to Adrian's point, I do like how this really goes out of its way to be, like, Q might be an omnipresent being outside the realm of time and space, but at the end of the day, he's a man, and men don't know how to relate to their kids. Yeah. It's just, like, serving real divorced dad energy this whole episode.
It's so much divorced dad. It's like,
well, the number of times that Janeway's like, why don't you talk to him about something? And he's like, ugh, talking to my child? Ew, why can't I just leave him with this stranger?
See, and like,
can't you be mommy?
Here's the thing. Keegan Delancey acted the shit out of this role. He literally acted it to the fullest of his ability. He made us all hate him, right? And there was so much interesting potential, which is like, what my question is like, why, how do you take this character that is presented in TNG, which for my money, again, All Good Things is the best Star Trek finale we've ever had of a series finale. We take this very important, crucial character that is the closest character to Jean-Luc Picard that there is, and you have this whole like expansive structure and everything. You could have had all this opportunity. It's like this episode is another perfect example, I feel like, of like really lazy writing, which you could have had a lot of opportunities to show us, well, this is how the continuum raises young or new beings or whatever. There's literally so little we know about
they could, instead of it being, oh, Q's a terrible dad, it's the Q continuum is terrified of procreation because they've never done it before, so they don't know what to do. And Q goes to Jane, goes to humans, he's like, you have children. And Jane was like, this is an omnipotent being.
And they set him up literally as going, they set him up as like, this child is going to be what saves the QQ. Like, they bother to set up that whole plot line, and then they just make him like a shitty brat, and that's the whole plot.
It's a chosen one narrative so bad J.K. Rowling could have written it.
Ooh.
There's a bunch of flip-flopping where Janeway agrees to take him, and they does something horrible, and then Q takes him back, and then he comes back to Janeway's like, pretty, pretty, please, mommy.
In the bath.
Okay, I have a question for the room. Do you think it would have been better or worse from a cringe standpoint if Q were also nude? Because he comes in full Star Trek uniform.
I think it would be worse. I think the fact he's in uniform and makes it, it's on the line there, because that is it's the farce. Then, of course, he kisses her foot and it's no longer farce.
Like, this is targeted. This is I had mercy blocked this moment in which Q kisses Janeway's foot in the bath, because
there's a good chance this episode is just titled "The One Where Q Kisses Janeway's Foot."
It should have been called that. That moment was, even for Star Trek, that moment of the kissing of the foot in the bathtub was extreme. It felt.
It's bad, and yeah, she essentially. So they take Baby Q, who is an amoeba for a bit. It's not.
Yeah, they tell us he doesn't shape up. He's going to be an amoeba forever. Like, that's what the Q Continuum has decided. And also, he's going to spend a week with Janeway, and he's not going to be able to allow to use his powers. And he's got to learn to be good, or he's going to become an amoeba. And like, I get that this is the point, but it takes him way too long to get with the program. Like, I know that's the point, but like, I just feel like he goes through the first couple of things. He tries to cheat. Like, Chakotay brings him to like a diplomatic thing, and he alters the program. And like, Janeway assigns him an essay on the Q Continuum, and Ichiban writes it for him. And like, and then Jane was like, okay, well, then I'm not going to help you because you obviously aren't going to do this in a week. And he's like, but then I'll be an amoeba. And I'm like, were you not listening? Like, I don't know why we had to do this, like, again. Like, I don't know why we had
I think, as somebody who was a child very recently, it was a very realistic depiction of the fact that teenagers are stupid.
I guess. I did like that Janeway used her mean gravel voice when she yelled at him. And I was like, so true, mommy. I think that's actually when I wrote down mommy Janeway.
But yeah, I think everyone's like, oh, he took so long. But he's also like a teenager, an omnipotent teenager. And teenagers think they're indestructible anyway. So if you know you're indestructible, but you're also a teenager, you know, you're not going to get the message until someone's like, until you get like told up front, you're just going to be an amoeba now.
So, I will say that the first time I did write in my notes, the moment I started shipping the two of them was when they called each other Itchy and Q-Ball. That's cute.
Yes.
I think that's cute.
That was the moment
Itchy and Q-Ball.
Oh, no.
Yeah, same. Unfortunately, I do ship
it. Yeah, because then I love the bit. So then there's the bit where like Q, so they go out in the shuttle, which is Q, and Tom gets his 5 minutes to be like, I know how to fly a shuttle. And Q Junior takes the wheel and he's like, I don't know what I'm doing. And it's kind of funny.
They go, there's like an annoying sound happening, and he goes to Itchy and is like, we should go fix that for him as a
there's a bit where Q reads the essay out.
Oh yeah, disappointed daddy.
Deadbeat dad.
Yeah, he writes an essay about the Q Continuum and what it means. And okay, in Q's defense, it seems like a bad essay. Like, it seems boring, I'll say it.
It might just be a good essay with a terrible conclusion, and I've written a fair few of those.
Sure, but Q is just sitting there looking at his son and being like, okay, well, you suck. And then Jane's like, why didn't you say you were proud of him? And he's like, well, because I'm not, and he sucks, so bye.
Listen, if my dad could pretend to like fish, Q could pretend to like his son.
Exactly. And also, the entire reason that the son was brought in was to save the Continuum from a civil war. So again, that, like, it just, the casualness of it, I don't know. It just,
I feel like it would have been better if the whole thing had been Q just trying to push him to get him to like be better and better and better, instead of, and not letting Q Junior find who he actually wants to be. But I guess it would have been going full for the full Chosen One shtick, and that's not screwball comedy, I guess. It really is the Brady Bunch of Star Trek.
It's the Brady Bunch of Star Trek. I think that's a very good way of describing it. Anyway, I will say it is a little bit gay to steal a shuttle pod and be like, let's just travel the universe forever and find some nooks and crannies to hide in. That's pretty gay, in my opinion.
It is.
It is pretty gay. And it's also the whole, we're going to go look at naked women thing. It reminds me of like, people at school who would like, oh, do you want to see a naked girl in my photo? And then like 3 years later, I'm like, oh, you're gay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you needed to do this. I understand why you did that, but you didn't have to do it that way. Like, you were already hiding that you were balding. You didn't need to do this as well.
They go up in the shuttle pod, and to be clear, Itchy does not want to come along. He's opposed to the whole notion.
Everyone needs a dumb nickname. Everyone I don't like on Voyager, you know, Chakotay is Chuckles, Itcheb is Itchy, Neelix is Nonce. Nonce, which for the record is English slang for a pedophile.
Did not know that.
Yeah, now you know.
Now I know.
I always forget Americans don't know that. I call Neelix a nonce. I go, I'm like, I'm calling him a pedophile.
I feel like in the United States, anytime I hear that word, it means like an idiot or like a dum-dum.
It does mean that, but here it's more used.
Sure.
Yeah. I have to remind people that.
But they go and they're going to go look at some naked ladies. But unfortunately, the cops show up and are like, you can't be here, you punk kids. And so they try to run away, but Itchy gets injured. And they take him back to Voyager. And he's like, guys, he's like real sick, which again, pretty gay. And they're in sick bay. And they're like, we need to know the, like, specific weapon that they used, because that's how I can make the antidote or whatever. So you've got to go back and apologize to those guys and accept the consequences.
And his dad goes,
why the fuck would I do that?
And I love it when
Q goes, like,
Q comes and his son's like, fix him. And his dad's like, I don't care if your friend dies, which I think is a very accurate reflection of most parents' feelings about their children's friends. Like, listen, this
I mean,
is
bad
this,
parents.
It's like, I don't know, this kid, he just comes to my house and eats my food.
I mean, I do think that was, like, legitimately one of the only good moments, because one, it seems very cute, like, to do, to be like, I don't give a shit about this human. And, like, legitimately, I think that was true, that, like, he wouldn't care about any other consequences, but, like, he did care about this one guy, like, this one other kid who was his friend.
His only friend, which also.
Only gay. Friend.
Gay.
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 And they're like, well, you're going to be turned into an amoeba at the end of the week anyway, because your daddy's disappointed in you. So you might as well go apologize. And when they're there, he makes a very emotional plea. And then the alien is like, actually, I think that Janeway is responsible for him. So she's got to suffer the punishment. And, you know, in a real moment of self-reflection, Q decides that, you know, he's going to be selfless and be like, please, no, don't take mommy. Take me instead. And then it's revealed that the cop was Q all along, and this was all a test.
You know the Arrested Development gag where George Bluth has the guy with the arm that comes off, and he uses the hand that comes off, and he uses it to teach his kids a lesson? That's all I can think of. It's like, and that's why you don't joyride with Federation shuttles. But with, like, omnipotent beings being like, and that's why you don't move continents.
Exactly.
God. It's a very weird moment. Because then they go to the council of the, like, Court of Q, which are all dressed like the Encounter at Farpoint judge.
I saw that. I'm like, that was a choice to just, like, keep using that outfit as being like, this is what Q look like.
When it's like, we know it's not. Because it's like in Encounter at Farpoint, we're told, oh, this is what judges look like. Judges are going to look like, you know, 50 years, and don't forget, First Atomic Horror is coming soon, kids.
He's supposed to be dressed like the, like, Earth Council after, like, the Third World War.
Yeah.
Yeah. I forgot about that. That's why he's in that outfit.
Really, yeah. Funny. And so he's not just gay.
And so do the writers of Voyager, probably.
I did like when the Q Council showed up, because, again, that's another, like, Voyager only had a few Q episodes, but they all offered a lot of lore that I guess was made possible by the fact that they're out in the Delta Quadrant and there's no Starfleet or what, but that was neat. That was probably one of my favorite parts of this episode, is seeing them all there, and I love their deciding of judgment and things like that. I
didn't like how this leaned into the Star Trek trope that, like, every time there's like human is the normal one and everyone else is alien, and so like Q is an omnipresent like species, but like they're really mostly concerned about humanity, and like if you're going to be turned into something, it's going to be a human.
I think it's like when you know somebody doesn't like a certain kind of food and you make it for them because you don't like it. It's like, we know you hate humans, so to punish you, we're going to make you a human. But somewhere out there, there's a Q who fucking hates Romulans.
They did the same thing with Odo. Like, if anything, they should have made him Bajoran, because like that's like the society he grew up in.
I feel like there's a couple times that Odo, and I could be wrong.
I feel like there's at least a couple points where he's like, now that I'm human or something like along those lines. But I could be wrong. I could be misremembering.
I mean, I feel like I can see writers doing that because they didn't read the scripts because they only have 10 days to write an episode in, so.
I don't necessarily think it's intentional per se. I think it might have just been like offhanded, like that is like how they were thinking about it. Mm.
But that's one of the things that will bother me the most about Star Trek, which is, again, not to be like this, but I'm like this, right? I'll just be a hater. I've read like 1,000 fanfics and 1,000 fan arts and 1,000 fan works where there's a lot more expansive thinking about what does it mean to be alien, and the kind of like continual centering of like human values, human things, especially with species like the Continuum. It's like, why are we doing this? Like, what's the point? Don't you guys want to think a little bit?
I think the thing is that also, you know, fan fiction, fan guys could do this. It's really fun, but also the guys write this episode. First, it's a job. Two, they got like 12 days to go from pitch to script, if less sometimes.
Especially then.
Also, they are constricted by people like Rick Berman.
And who?
Others. Who? The devil.
We do not recognize that.
Oh! Rick Birdman, thank you.
Rick Bird. Well, Big Red.
I mean, but also too,
Mitt Herman.
That bothers me about this era of Trek, and Voyager has a really specific weird thing with this because I don't feel like DS9 has this, and Enterprise is all the way at the other end of what I call the Ouroboros theory of forced heterosexuality, which is that if you go so far into trying to know homo something,
you're just gay.
You eventually circle it around to make it gay, like the scenes in Enterprise where everybody's rubbing each other down in the, you know, the decon room and stuff like that. It's like, it just goes so far. But the whole thing of like the refusal, it's like, I grew up, you know, before all of y'all, I don't expect to see queerness on screen, but the kind of aggressively no homoing of everything like removes all the space for interpretation and the space for subtext, because in TNG there's tons of that with Q, and we certainly mm-hmm. see Q like run off with Vash and kind of like certain other things, and we have like all the assumed, you know, kind of default of heterosexuality, but there's a lot more room and a lot more space. And with these Q Voyager appearances, they're like, just to be clear, absolutely no homo, not even a little.
And like everyone on Voyager are like good buddies. Like there's very little, like of all the starters, I think it's probably the least horny.
Yes.
Like, and that's a relative statement, but like I feel like even among the characters that are theoretically supposed to be in romances, there's like very little, like even when there is like romantic chemistry, there's very little physical chemistry. Like there's never, I mean, like you never see two characters in a room and you're like, these two gotta fuck. See, like that's like not Tom and, happens.
Tom and Ballada go straight from like romance to the Miles O'Brien school of dodgy marriage. They don't have the bit.
Like, I will never be mad. Stop being mad that they decided that for in order for Paris to be less of an absolute tool, they had to give him a wife. And instead of doing like interesting things with Bolana's character, they were like, I guess we're not going to write any good episodes about her anymore. What if we just had her be married and be kind of a bitch about it?
They didn't earn the Tom Bolana thing. Like I see the pairing, but they didn't earn it. And
I'm not saying I couldn't ever see it, but like it was so clearly put there to make Tom seem better rather than because, like, allowing that relationship
to which isn't really necessary, because by the time they do the Tom Bellana thing, Tom has had deliberate character development for him to no longer be a terrible person.
But he needs a trophy wife for being such a good boy. He did a good job.
He is also, I guess he is the white man on the bridge.
Yeah.
I forgot how blonde he was until this episode, to be quite honest. I don't
forgot how terrible his hair was. I will say this, Robert Duncan McNeil, you're a nice guy, but your hair is terrible for 7 seasons.
It's three bad
good moments.
Okay, but happens. in his defense, it was the 90s, so.
Yeah, they were terrible.
The hair of Voyager isn't great all around. Like, no. There's a lot happening. Kate Mulgrew's wigs are bad for a lot of the time. My least favorite one is the one where it just looks like she's wearing a teapot on her head that makes it look like her head's going to, like, fall back because it's too top-heavy at any point.
Chakotay's hair goes from being too short to shit to too short again. Jerry Ryan's hair should just be shorter, but for some reason they want to allow it to be down for some reason. Presumably the makeup people went, we're going to have it short, and Rick Berman said something like, I don't want her to look like a lesbian, to which all I have to say is, like, I'm not going to fuck you. She's married to a senator, Rick. A prominent senator who definitely is about to screw up his own chances by getting divorced from his wife. That's the opening opportunity for Barack Obama to become the Democratic nominee. But either way, she's not going to fuck you.
Really one of the funniest things that's ever happened.
And it's funny really and truly. Happened.
Really and truly.
It is insane how much of, like, it is this very Rick Bowen being like, I want this woman to have sex with me when she clearly isn't going to.
I just don't know how Star Trek keeps lucking into these actresses who they give absolute garbage roles and scripts to that, like, manage to just be some of, like, some of the most, like, subtle, incredible acting I've ever seen, like, go into it.
Like Michelle Yeoh.
Yes. And, like, I think Jolene Ballock is also like that. Like, I can never remember their names,
but the two who play the Brit, Owoshikun and Detmer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know the actors. You love him. They give them such shit and they, like, turn in these incredible performances, and I'm like, how does Star Trek keep finding and absolutely humiliating these women to an inch of their lives?
Well, it's very simple. Rick Berman hates women.
And gays.
Women, like, gays, black people, Germans, presumably.
Doesn't love Asians.
Doesn't like salt either.
It's just disappointing because, again, like, I feel like the Voyager premise is one of the better premises, you know? Like, we can split hairs about the premiere of Voyager, but for me, like, going from watching, I think I watched all of DS9, all of TNG, all of TOS, and then started watching Voyager. Voyager was the one that was the most easy to sink my teeth into from the beginning, just because the basic premise in 40, the hour and a half is essentially, like, this science vessel is, you know, flung into the Delta Quadrant. It's one of the better premises to start out with. It's one of the easier ones. It's very self-contained. And there was a lot of potential for a lot of things to happen. I think Voyager does horror a lot better than many other Star Treks.
That's true.
Body horror and suspense much better.
Yeah, considering that's where, like, the first 10 episodes of the original series are all chock-a-block body horror and psychological horror. Voyager does it really well. There's a lot of stuff that is very key to the original series, like being out on your own and dealing with stuff with no support and the horror of not being able to know you've just got your own wits to save you. That does well, but the premise stuff, all I have to say about that is that there's a reason Ron Moore made the Battlestar Galactica reboot, which was that he was told he couldn't use those ideas on Voyager, so he went and used them for his own ideas.
I will say I've always been disappointed that they didn't do more with the fact that it was, like, a blended ship of Rebel, Marquis, and Starfleet, because, like, they did it a bit. I hate that episode where there's, like, the three people that are, like, not, they're from the Marquis crew that aren't meshing well. It's like Tuvok is, like, putting them through boot camp. And they're like, listen, none of us wanted to be in Starfleet. Like, this is not, like, we did not choose to enlist. We just, like, happened to be thrown out here. And now you're, and, like, very specifically, we were part of a rebel group that was like fighting to be able to like be left the fuck alone from people like you. And now you're telling me that like I can't wear the symbol of my religion, that like I have to do all this like exercise and bullshit, and you're gonna yell at me and like treat me like a piece of shit for no reason. And like I get that they are like on a ship and they need to have like a certain level of cohesion, but it, number one, it was always very much like Starfleet is the right thing. Like you should like all the Marquis should be Starfleet because the Marquis are the bad guys. And I also just think that they didn't play enough with like that dynamic of like, like what could Starfleet learn from the Marquis, and like what dynamics are going to be set up when you are like forced to become a crew with the other side.
It was very simply that Burman was deeply uninterested in anything getting to do with his own version of TNG.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, so when I rewatched Voyager, like it's something that like I can binge a lot easier. Like the episodes like sort of all flow into each other. Like I think it is similar to like a sitcom thing where like there isn't a lot, like there's maybe like one or two big events per season. They're like, and it's usually like the mid-season and the season finale. And like all the other episodes are just, this is a day that, this is like a week on Voyager. Like these are the wacky shenanigans that happen this week on Voyager.
But it's also, there's not much variance in what happens. Whereas, I mean, even with TNG, what happens is very different. Like you will have episodes which are very high paced. You know, you like season three, you go yesterday's Enterprise, the enemy, the defector. And then you have really therapeutic ones like Menage a Troi and, that's not therapeutic, that's bullshit. We need to do that on the episode. That's not a therapeutic episode. You get the point. And it jumps around, whereas Voyager episodes are just kind of like, they start in the same place and they finish in the same place.
Yeah, it's a sitcom.
It's the
Brady Bunch. You gotta reset for the next week.
Even TOS doesn't do that. It's on six.
No, and but like, I think it's sort of nice to have like, just like, it's a comfort show, you know? It's like the equivalent of eating like the cupcakes from the grocery store. Like, are they as good as like an artisanal one? No, but you know, sometimes you're home late from work and you just want something sweet, and you know, it gets you where you need to be.
The other thing too, though, is that I feel that Voyager does a lot more with interpersonal relationships than many other Treks because of the cohesion of the ship. And, you know, like we can, you know, not to go too deep into it, but it's like, you know, whatever you think of Chakotay and Janeway, like they had clearly a foundation of like mutual respect, of friendship. Like the way that Janeway cares for all the people under her command is like a common theme. They're stuck together, you know. Like I like a lot of the interpersonal stuff that got explored in Voyager by a having the stakes be set, you know, the initial stakes are set high, right? We're trying to get home before we all die 40,000, you know, light years or whatever. But the lower stakes from week to week make it possible for some of these connections to form between people, where you get to see Tom and Harry being buddies, right? You don't get to see a lot of that in some of the modern stuff. And we now have, you know, all these shows, which I really like and I really enjoy watching, but they're all very plot heavy. They're all very action heavy. And as a result, you don't get to see some of these quieter sort of relationship moments. I do like that. You know, it's just, I don't know. Yeah. I don't have a lot of context on this just because like I watched it all in one go. So like it all just kind of,
I mean, you're right. I mean, we'll think very much about the statement that came out recently from about Raffi and Seven, where they were like, yeah, you know, it's, we don't want to see all the fun falling in love stuff. They're just an established relationship now because, you know, we've got a plot to do. And it's like, that's a cop-out.
It is.
Yeah.
It's a pathetic cop-out. And they know it's a pathetic cop-out.
It is pathetic, but also too, it's like in Voyager and in the 90s and, you know, and in Voyager and in DS9 and in TNG even, because there isn't this aggressive, super aggressive, like no homoing explanation of like every single relationship that happens, there's just a lot more space for interpretation that's open. And then because the shows are slower and slower paced, there's also a lot more space for the relationships to grow, if that makes sense. And like just with some of the stuff I see now, just with the fast moving and the real choice, it's a choice been made to prioritize the plot over to prioritizing the character development.
Which always gets me, because the original series isn't exactly not character driven. It's incredibly, a lot of the episodes are incredibly plot driven. Like we did.
It is.
But it isn't. It
is, like, the TOS is character driven, but it only focuses on those three characters. And I do think that like, if you go back, I think that at least for Kirk, Spock, McCoy, I think that like, and I think Jesse Gender was making this point earlier, which was that characters in, sorry, I lost my train of thought. What were we talking about?
Characters versus plot and character development.
Oh, like if you look at like the bridge crew, if you look at like purely the amount of time that the non-trio are seen and the lines that they have in TOS, it's not much. But like, because these characters have been with us for like nearly 60 years at this point, we've like, and like also after TOS, like the movies came out and like, there was obviously so much like fan fiction and just like, not even just like fan fiction of actual writing stories, but just like discussion of these characters. And these characters have existed not just in Star Trek, but in like the public consciousness for so long that like her point
they
was
feel more depth.
They feel like they have a lot more depth than like they do if you would only watch TOS. Like Sulu, Chekhov, and Uhura like don't really get that much of a personality. Like
right.
They don't even have like individual episodes like where we find out. It's not even like even like Travis Mayweather, who I think was critically underused on Enterprise. Even he had like at least one or two episodes where it's like, this is a Travis episode. Like, let's see what's happening with him.
Yeah, and we like, got a Scotty really... episode, and it was just him being accused of murder, which it still kind of wasn't about him.
Yeah, and like, there's no episode where we like learn Chekhov's backstory, or like where we see Uhura having to deal with like a family issue back home. Like, that's like, and like, it, that's like not what it was interested in. Like, that's not a bad thing. But I think that like part of why I think with a large, like when you have a larger ensemble cast, it is a lot harder to do that. When as opposed to like, and I think the Enterprise tried to sort of recapture that by like again mostly concentrating on the three people, but I mean I just think that like, and also I think that the original portrayal, like I think Leonard Nimoy, William Shatner, and DeForest Kelly just like individually had such a good unique dynamic. Like I think it was like sort of, I think it's like similar to a lot of like Star Wars, I think is a good example of like those actors had really good chemistry and like it was lightning in a bottle where like it worked really well.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the problems with Star Wars movies that have come after is they're trying to recapture the vibe. And they're like, the thing that made these movies good were like everything else around it. Like it was like the universe and the effects and like the story. And like
no,
those things helped
people.
Obviously, but like,
no,
it's those three
yeah,
people.
Exactly.
Those three people just had good dynamics.
Well, that's why, like, when Picard season one came out, right, the most satisfying scenes from that were all the reunion scenes with the actors, right? And with Voyager and with all these other shows, when you get to season five, season six, season seven, there's literally just a camaraderie there. There's an intimacy there that can't be faked, that mm-hmm. can't be acted. And when you have that, it's really beautiful. And I think I see it in pretty much every Star Trek show.
I think the only show that has come off the ground on its feet with that whole camaraderie thing might be Lower Decks.
Yeah.
But that's also, I guess, because in animation, those people are used to working without, because when you start a TV show, you have to get used to being around people very quickly and it makes it still to, you don't have the chemistry. Whereas I guess if you're used to VA stuff, you go into it on your feet. But also the nature of a screwball comedy means that there's a lot of improv as well. So you have to get to know.
Well, and also Lower Decks is very specifically like a meta show. Like it's a very like when you're to watch Lower Decks, like I guess there is something. I'm not saying that there's no value if you aren't already a Star Trek fan, that like it doesn't have its own plots that are charming. But fundamentally, the reason to watch that show, and like the reason I think people clicked with it a lot faster than like let's say Discovery, is you even though they aren't copy and pasting characters that have existed in other Star Trek, like it's building on the fact that you have watched Star Trek, you know these dynamics, like we can use shorthand. Like we don't have to tell you about like the long history between these people because you've watched enough Star Trek to know like a captain's relationship to family life. Like you know about like the like eager ensign, you know the new girl who's too chipper. Like those are already archetypes in Star Trek that we've established, and so I think it is a lot easier to like make those too much. And again, like I think to your point, they are animated, so they don't have to. Like I think the barrier of believability is much lower when it's an animated thing, and if you don't have to have those like really subtle like. I think you can tell when two actors in the same room aren't super close yet. Like that is something that you can pick up on. And you can tell if they have good chemistry, or I feel like that's a lot easier. They can draw the good chemistry.
You said that. You know what came into my head? the bit at the beginning of The Wounded where Miles and Keiko are having dinner and it feels like they're on their second date, but they've actually just been married. And it's just like, I always forget that that's after Data's day. So they've actually been married for a bit. They've known each other for a while, but it just feels so stilted.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
the Miles Keiko, I mean, okay, I will say that their relationship did always seem stilted, but it did seem reminiscent of a lot of only okay marriages for parents of my friends.
Yeah, I feel like the problem with that was that they never let Rosalind Chow and Colm Meaney like riff off each other properly.
Yeah, like, and I really like her as an actor, and I think that there's a lot of scenes, and I think like it was a relatively like kind of progressive thing that they did on Beauty Space Hour. They were like, listen, number one, I am not being fulfilled by this career that I have here, and two, like, I did like the scene where he suggests that she like make like a botanical garden like on the station, and she's like, this isn't a hobby, this is my career.
Yeah, and that they then just go with it, that she continues to do the botany stuff. Yeah, it's good. Anyway, that's off topic. We're deeply off topic.
We're deeply off topic.
Anyway, there's no actual interesting trivia here. There's nothing cursed in the trivia.
This episode proves that the Klingons were right, that you should always kill your gods. Fuck you. Fuck you. That's like half my notes. It's just writing fuck you every like third line. I just don't like gods. I just think that we should stab them. Who needs them?
Here's the thing. And as a big continuum slut, you know how I feel about this. Like, I don't think of the Q as gods. And I find it kind of like a lazy framing of them, because the thing is, they're just so advanced. They're beyond our understanding, which is like, it's kind of a cop out to me to be like, oh, this is just a god. When they're in reality, I believe they're more like the grand physicists of the universe, in the sense that they're not actually immortal, because like when the eventual heat death of the universe comes, I don't think the continuum's going to survive that, right? But that's just kind of where my brain goes with it. But the Q being such a petulant little brat, it really only works when it's with Picard, because he's so Picard, you know, like it just, they tried to like,
yeah, and he's obviously doing it not to be an asshole. He's doing it because like he enjoys getting under Picard's skin and like he finds it funny. Whereas like, I feel like in Voyager, he's just like a menace to be a menace.
Yes.
Like he just is like, the stuff it's that he does is like down. So extreme. Yeah.
It's punching down in Voyager. Because it's also in that Voyager,
in his first appearance in Death Wish, I think works, because he's not there because he wants to play around Picard. He's there because the Q continuum has said, "We need you to get Quinn and put him back in prison." He doesn't want to be there. He spends the whole time being really furious, and he has to do this, and that's why it works there. Mm-hmm. What he really wants to do is piss around with Picard in the Alpha Quadrant, but he's being asked to be their enforcer.
It's also amazing that Voyager gave us the canon line of Q talking about how itchy the Starfleet sheets are. And it's like, sir, how do you know that? How do you know how itchy those Starfleet sheets are?
Besides, I just think a lot about that, human. That scene when he sleeps in, when Picard wakes in bed up next to Q. And if I'd written that, I'd have had Picard ask, how long have you been here? And Q just say nothing. Just say, I love Picard, just sort of stares at him like, I think I've been violated. Anyway, yeah, so there's not much, there's no real trivia. So the real question is, are we quitting?
It's too late for me to quit.
I guess not.
Yeah, it's not really it's not really bad enough. It's just kind of cringe, and it's kind of,
I think part of the reason this episode bothers me so much is it's so late game. Like, if this episode had come out in season two when they were still figuring their shit out and they like needed ideas, but like, it's, this episode is like surrounded on a lot of other sides with actual good episodes, and like by this point they did have such strong character, like the relationships between the crew were so strong. Okay. I think Arthur, I think it's a good episode, which is the one that comes in.
Okay, yeah, that's good.
I think that like they, at this point, like to Adrian's point, they had those dynamics down at this point, and rather than using those, like the crew interacts with each other for like maybe 5 minutes. Like the majority of this episode is just Janeway, Q, and Q's son fucking around.
We do get Q Junior Itcha content, and I'm still not sure how I feel about that.
Well, I mean, you know, not sometimes you can ship something that's toxic and bad for everyone involved, you know? I just sort of like that moment where Janeway was like, you know, if they don't want you to be a Q anymore, I'll ask them to let you be a human. He's like, yeah. I don't want to be a human. Like, fuck that. I'm like, I think that's a reasonable thing. Like, I don't think everyone just wants to be human.
Yeah, but it's a nice moment. I'll give you that.
But I do also like how, again, you know, Janeway holds it together for the whole episode, you know, and she's, I don't like calling her mommy, right? But like she holds it together for the whole episode. And at the end, when it comes down that he might actually be kicked out and need a place to go, who comes through for him? It's Janeway with the big open Brady Bunch. Exactly.
I just think that also this episode would have worked better as a TNG episode. Like, I think if...
Yeah.
Like...
If it had been Picard being annoyed...
Yes, like one that would have just like worked better for me, like as like a pure entertainment. But also, I don't know why they're having Q. Like, I don't know why he decides Janeway's the one that should teach her child about ethics. Like, I don't know why that is the decision that is made with the Q continuum. Like, at least if he did it on the Enterprise, you could be like, oh, that makes sense. And like, obviously, TNG was off the air by the time this episode came out. But like, I think if you wanted to do that as an idea on TNG, it's like, oh well, the Enterprise is like the flagship of the Federation, and like also Q already has an established relationship
with Picard. Well, and
True Q even says like, oh, I should have made Picard the godfather.
Well, and True Q was a very interesting episode with the human girl who's actually a Q. Like, that was a very good TNG episode, and I thought it was a very good Q episode too, and a Q card episode. I liked all of that. I think that the thing about Q and Voyager was that, like, it's very clear that, like, John and Kate are friends and get on and act well together. And I do think that there was just a lot of missed potential in this episode to make it less about, like, this person's clearly real life experience of parenting a teenage son, and maybe perhaps a little more supernatural, otherworldly, alien. I would have really enjoyed that angle on it.
Okay, yeah. Do you guys think that Janeway should have punched Q? Do you think that would have made this episode better?
Absolutely.
That would have made this episode better.
Yes.
So, Adrian, on a scale of 1 to 5 trip nipples, 5 nipples being more cursed, how would you rate this episode?
I think it's a 3.
It's a 10. It's a scale of 10 in the Genevieve.
Is it? I thought it was 5.
I've only been scale right of 10. Five it's a 1 to 10 scale of cursedness, with 0 nipples being the right amount of nipples. And 10 nipples being nipples all the way up each of your wrists and onto your forearms.
I'm going to be honest. I'm thinking of the ranking system of cat nipples that they use on the Bechdel cast.
Ah, no.
It's out of 5 so nipples.
These are trip nipples, which are the wrist nipples on trip.
Sure.
I'm going to put this as a 6, you know. It like the forced heterosexuality and the kind of like... simplification of the Q continuum, it just annoys me to no end, as does the constant insistence that this genderless powerful alien is definitely straight with a straight wife and a straight kid who wants to see 7 of 9 naked. I'm gonna give it a solid 6.
I'm gonna give it a 6. It would have been a 4, but then I remember this made me consider the concept of enemies to lovers, Q Junior Itchem, which I think gives it a 6. I shouldn't have had to think about that.
I would say that you've made some good points. I'm going to give it a 5 because this episode is less cursed than it is just like enraging. Like, it's just annoying more than it is like horrific to watch.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There are some episodes of Star Trek where I'm like, this is horrific. And like, it did have some horrific moments, the foot kissing, obviously. But like, most of the episode, I was just yelling, fuck you at the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll go 5, right in the middle.
5. So that's 6, 6, 5. That's an average of about 5.6, which
I'm gonna give all my nipples 2 Q, 2 for John Delancey, 3 for John Delancey's son.
Keegan Delancey, who if you go to the Wikipedia page, works for the United States Foreign Service now. It's great.
Good for him.
Good for him.
Yeah, and anything to plug to the listeners at all?
I'm an artistic consultant on a Q Continuum concept record and fanfic story that I would love for people to check out.
What's it called?
Called Outer Galaxies.
Excellent. Well, I hope everyone checks that out. And if you want to harass us, you can find us at Quit Star Trek Pod on Twitter or email us at iquitstartrek@gmail.com. I don't guarantee I'll read your emails. I don't guarantee I'll read your messages. I try. I often forget. It's nothing personal. I just have better things to do.
No, it is personal. He hates you.
Yeah. Once again, as an important reminder, this is an anti-parasocial relationship podcast. So I owe you nothing. You owe me nothing. Please just enjoy the podcast. Tell me you liked it. Ask to come on it. And then go.
Go away.
Don't expect anything from us but English swear words and calling Neelix a nonce. So yeah. Until next time, folks, don't dump your son on Catherine Janeway. And don't kiss feet.
Don't kiss feet.
Don't kiss Kate Mulgrew's feet.
Don't kiss mommy.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.